Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome. And for those of you I don't know, my name is Bill Foster. I'm the this year's chair of the AES UK section. I'd like to welcome all of you to this quite special evening. We've done one of these before last year, and we decided that we'd make this an annual event where we invite one of our universities who's involved in the field of audio, heavily involved in the field of audio, to come and present on some of the research that they're doing, and with a view to interacting with some of our members who maybe can have a dialogue with the students afterwards and talk about what they're doing and perhaps offer some insights from their experience, which they may have had over the years. And I'd like to introduce you now to Mark Plumley from the Centre for Digital Music at Queen Mary University of London. Mark will introduce what's going to happen this evening. Mark.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Bill. It's a great opportunity for us to come here this evening, and thank you very much for inviting us. Both myself and Josh Rice are going to be talking this evening about some of the research that we do within the Centre for Digital Music. We won't keep you for too long on this section, perhaps 25 minutes, something like this, on our two talks, and then there'll be an opportunity to talk to the researchers in more detail in the room down the corridor, and to look at some posters and demonstrations about the work that we do. So what I'm going to be doing to start with is just to give you a bit of an overview of what the Centre for Digital Music does. We're not going to try and cover everything here, but I'm going to give you a quick zoom over things, and then Josh is going to go into a bit more detail about the audio engineering related work within the centre. But I want to make this fairly informal, so if anybody's got any questions, then I can sort of handle one or two things as we go through. Otherwise, I'll be here after the end of the talks, and so by all means, ask me questions afterwards. Okay, so the Centre for Digital Music, we began our research at Queen Mary in 2001 and officially became the Centre for Digital Music a couple of years later. We've got, I've got on here about 50 full-time members, but every time I turn around, it seems to be rather more than that. We've just had another four academic staff that have arrived this autumn as part of a major expansion of our department. I'll mention a little bit about their work in a moment, but that includes academic staff, research students, and visitors. And actually, I want to, we've got a couple of people that are visiting here at the moment, and also interns. And I think one of the things that is actually interesting for us is how much that helps us to see a different perspective of the research that we do and connect with other groups. So if any people are interested in hosting visitors from our group or sending visitors to us, then by all means, talk to us afterwards. Our research area, well, as the title suggests, in digital music and in audio, the history of the group really comes from a signal processing perspective, but it's very much opened out from there into things like music performance, real-time systems, music transcription, and so on from there. So all the things along the bottom here, from analysis modeling, even semantic web stuff as well, that there'll be some stuff about later. Okay, so a few mugshots of people that you might recognize from here. So this is currently the academic staff in the department, as well as myself. I'm current director, and Mark Sadler, who's now head of our department, and also Q Media, which is a sort of wider thing in digital media. Some of the people here that you'll recognise, as well as Josh on this side. Some people couldn't be here this evening, but we'll be some more of us around here. So Brian, Nick Brynkins, Tony Stockman, Josh are here, as well as myself. I think if I've missed out anybody, they will shout. Very roughly, at the moment, the Centre of Digital Music does research in about four areas, but we are expanding on these areas at the moment. But these are the ones as of autumn this year, and I'll mention a little bit about some of the other ones later. So roughly, music informatics, machine listening, interactional sound and music, and audio engineering. Josh will talk more about the audio engineering in a minute, but I'll just give a couple of keywords to the things that come up in those areas at the moment. So music informatics, this is about how do you extract information from music. Music information retrieval was one of the things that really got us into this. For those of you that have been to or heard of the ISMIA Music Information Retrieval Conference, these things about automatic music transcription, how do you find from sounds the notes that are being played, that was one of those key problems that got us started. The query by humming problem, which actually is harder than you think because actually people are rubbish at humming. So this is what got us started into this music transcription, semantic analysis, and this sort of area is also leading into a lot of Web 2.0 technology. So there's a lot of semantic web work going on in this. And if you come across things like DBpedia and the BBC/programs website, one of the ex-PhD students here is helping to transform what the BBC does about presenting its information on the web. The interactional sound and music area, this is really about, as we say here, maybe I should use the little laser pointer here, real-time interactive systems. So as you can process these things fast enough to be in real time, you can then start to do interesting things as part of a performance with that. So this is particularly things that that Nick Bryan-Kins has been working out on here. Things like spatialized composition as well, collaborative music making. Can you have an app for your iPhone that you can work with some other people somewhere else around the world and make music as part of that? Also, another aspect from here is data sonification. So Tony Stockman here is working on aspects of how can you take data and make sounds from that so that people who are visually impaired, for example, can make sense of what other people perceive as visual data. So in another one of the areas, the machine listening area, so this is a particular area that I work in, things like sound source separation comes up in here, the technique of independent component analysis, and some work on information theory and music. This is related to how might be how people perceive music by the way that music is revealed to you as you listen to it. So if any of you have done some communication engineering stuff, we're sort of trying to draw a link between how music evolves over time and how a communication channel goes. So if you're interested in that, come and talk to me afterwards. And then last but not least, for here, the audio engineering side that Josh will talk more about, things like digital audio effects, automatic mixing and so on, but I'll leave Josh to say more on that side. So some new research areas, I've just selected some keywords from things that with the arrival of Elaine Chu, Andrew McPherson, Geraint Wiggins and Marcus Pierce, we're adding things like computational musicology, study of performance, augmented acoustic instruments, how you can take a piano and add some electromagnets and make it crescendo through a single note, computational creativity, this is an area of Geraint's, and music perception and cognition. All these sorts of new areas are things that really we haven't had much activity in before, or where we have, it's been a little peripheral. And I think this is really going to allow us to expand into a lot of space that we were not in before and bring links in to things that we've been doing otherwise. So, for example, if you're trying to measure the similarity between pieces of music so that you can create a playlist for somebody, it might help you to understand how people listen to music and how they perceive the similarity between pieces. And so this is where the cognitive side really comes into here. So it's going to be really exciting for us, I think, to see where we can go with all of this. So as well as the research, which is really what this evening is concentrated on, we should mention that we also do a number of teaching programs. We have undergraduate, BEng, three-year and four-year MEng programs in audio systems engineering. And for next year, we've got a new BSc in Multimedia and Arts Technology. So this is really something that's come out from a Media and Arts Technology doctoral training center that was funded a couple of years ago that is enabling us to bring in people with non-engineering and science backgrounds into something more on the more technical side. So it's a really interesting mixture of arts and technology together. And so some of the people on that program are here as well this evening that you can talk to. We also have some master's level programs for that too. On the research funding, in order to keep a group going of this size, we need the amount of research funding to come in. It seems to be something we've done fairly well on. Some of our big grants, the online music retrieval and searching grant, which was joint with Goldsmiths, and also various European projects. Again, talk to us after that if you want to know more. And industry collaboration, so through things like knowledge transfer partnerships and internships, some on our Media and Arts Technology PhD programme. This is something that's working really very well for us, and so we're building up a number of these links. And some of you might have come along to a 10th anniversary event that we had in September, and we had an evening of presentations from some of the people related to this. So in terms of other things like knowledge transfer, the sort of things you expect people to talk to, like patents and spin-offs, but also we put quite a lot of work into building software that people can download. We're not a research group where we can write a research paper and that's it. That's not going to get to the people that we need to use our stuff. So we build software like the Sonic Visualizer tool, iPhone apps, plugins for iTunes and so on that actually get the stuff where to the people where people can use it. And even if they don't care about the fact it's got research in there, we're able to use this Sonic Visualizer with some research beat tracking software in it just behind the scenes. And so finally, a bit on public engagement. Actually, a lot of the people working in the Centre for Digital Music work in it because they want to do stuff with music. And so actually, it's very natural that people want to put on events of things that we could do. We've got some photographs of things, science fairs we've got people going to every so often. And there's an audio magazine for schools outreach, and there's some copies of that on the table that you can pick up there. If you want to find out more about that, there's a C4DM Presents website that you can find out the sort of things that we've been doing. So I think at that point, that's the last slide, I think. Yes. Yeah. So at this point, I'll hand you over to Josh to talk more about the audio engineering side. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mark. So I'm going to keep this fairly brief so that there's plenty of time to see the posters, see the demos, and talk with all of the researchers. For those who don't know me, my name is Josh Rice, and I sort of lead the audio engineering research within the center. So some of you might have already seen this slide in a previous talk. I'm just going to discuss a bit of the motivations for the directions that we're taking. So if one considers modern digital camera or camcorder, it's got all this intelligence built into the device. Auto focus, exposure fix, auto flash, face, scene, motion detection, red eye removal, and there's no processing that needs to be done manually by the user. You don't need to go into Photoshop and do all these things. These are done within the camera using signal processing techniques. On the other hand, if you compare it with an audio recording device, and I just picked one at random here, and looked at the quotes that are used in marketing the device. So you walk into Currys and you'll see all of these things listed on just about every camera, but an audio recording device, and they'll all say things like this, interactively guides a new user. You need that guidance. I love the second point, retry function to help fix mistakes. So it's actually acknowledging within the promotional material that they expect it not to work very well or not to work under all conditions. And record anywhere. Can you imagine if a camera said, you can take photos inside and outside, and yet they actually use that to market the audio recording device? So why isn't there an autofocus for audio? I've heard it said that audio engineering is in part a victim of its own success. They've figured out, by they, it means a lot of the people in this room as well, figured out how to add more and more functionality to a recording device. But it hasn't become more intelligent. The device doesn't listen to the audio signal. Rather, you have more things that can be done, more versatility, but it requires trained audio engineers to operate the device. The skill is not embedded in the device. So we want to fix that. We want to construct intelligent systems for sound engineering, and by that we mean the textbook definition, a system that can perceive, reason, learn, and act intelligently. So it will configure its own parameter settings. It will dynamically adapt its behavior to the audio that's coming in or to changes in the sound scene. And those best practices in sound engineering that the engineers have learned should be embedded into the device. It knows what to do with certain signals. The requirements for our work are that it should be versatile and applicable for a lot of situations, usable by the amateur and the expert. So there's a different set of constraints for an expert to want to use a tool. You know, today with cameras, you speak to a professional photographer and they will use all of the automation built into the device, but then they will customize that, modify that. So that still needs to be possible. It needs to be usable for post-production and live recording and mixing. And so the live situation, we need real time, but more than that, we need minimal latency. Post-production, it needs to be really advanced. People will accept, for instance, a not so perfect mix in a live situation, but they certainly won't accept that on a professional recording. So we're creating tools for the sound engineer, automating the repetitive tasks, the technical aspects so that the sound engineer can do the more creative things. We're trying to create a sort of black box device for the musician. So plug in their instruments into this device and create decent live sound. Not great, but better than no sound engineer. And embedded systems for the consumer that just enhance the listening experience, that sort of autofocus for audio. So going to very briefly mention a few examples of what we're doing. A lot of the work involves intelligent digital audio effects. We've been doing this for systems that do feedback prevention, but not based on simple feedback cancellation, but really try to prevent feedback the way a live sound engineer might adjust the levels while mixing. We've, and many of you know this, we've been developing automatic mixing systems, but now we're taking that to a whole new level where we're building in more intelligence, testing it on multi-track test beds, and really trying to perfect it under a wide variety of situations. So plenty of the researchers who've been doing that, Siosha, Stuart, Michael, they're all in this room right now, and I'm sure they'd be happy to talk to you. We've developed a system for transient modification, a very high-performance system that tries to adjust the parameters for the situation, automate the parameters in dynamic range compression, reverse engineering mixes, looking at a source separation technique, but specifically designed for live sound, where you've got, say, many microphones around a drum kit. So this work involves high-performance real-time signal processing, new methods of multi-channel or really multi-track signal processing, so a new paradigm. Multi-channel signal processing usually means that you're just trying to extract information about the sources coming in. Here we try and combine them. We're doing a lot of work on novel interfaces for music production. Asterios Zacharakis, who's here, he's been doing a lot of this. So systems that allow one to work with the content in new ways. And this is bringing in innovative interface design, creative sound engineering techniques, and really looking at the musical psychoacoustics. So trying to understand, for instance, what does timbre really mean? And how do we modify timbre with just a few controls on an interface? Alice Clifford, one of the PhD students, she's been looking at reducing microphone artifacts and live sound. So you can consider all of the situations when you have set an instrument being recorded by a microphone, possibility of the proximity effect occurring, or in real-world acoustics, there's reverberation. If there's two microphones, you can have a comb filtering effect. And, of course, two sources, two microphones, there can be bleed and crosstalk. So looking together and trying to figure out how best to modify the sound of the microphone, put intelligent signal processing into the device. Andy Simpson, he's also here. He's been looking at a lot of non-linearities and how that affects loudness and just noticeable difference. So psychoacoustic studies, but dealing with non-linearity. Most of the time, psychoacoustics, a lot of the studies are really about how one perceives a pure tone. In reality, We're not just listening to pure tones. Yeah, as I mentioned, Asterios Sakarakis is doing work on musical timbre. This is leading towards a device where someone could, say, modify the brightness or the warmth of the sound just by turning knobs on the interface to affect perceptual attributes. Martin Morrell, he's doing work on spatial audio and real-time rendering, gesture control, and building a system where the user has the best speaker layout for spatial audio, where the listening experience is ideal, where there's gestural control, and kind of looking at spatial audio from all the different aspects. Okay, so I'm going to hand back to Bill in a second, but do encourage you to talk to all of the researchers here, find out what they're doing, talk to me if you've got some further questions or anyone else, listen to the demonstrations, and enjoy yourselves.
Well, thank you.